This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Beth Thomas and discuss reactive attachment disorder? First, I will review the case of Beth Thomas, define reactive attachment disorder, then move to my analysis. Starting with the case of Beth Thomas, in 1990, a film titled Child of Rage was released on HBO as part of their America Undercover series. A made-for-TV movie based on the story was released 2 years later. Here is a summary of the documentary. Tim and Julie Tennant were a married couple who lived in the South. Tim was a minister. The couple was unable to have children, therefore they adopted two children from social services in February 1984. Beth Thomas, who was just over a year and a half old, and her brother Jonathan, who was 7 months old. The couple was told that Beth and Jonathan were normal and healthy. After the adoption, everything was pretty good in the family home. Over the course of a few months, however, this would change. The couple realized that terrible things happened to Beth and Jonathan prior to the adoption. The mistreatment appeared to have a particularly negative effect on Beth. Her biological mother died from kidney disease right before the adoption, and her father allegedly had committed offenses against Beth. She started having nightmares and mistreated her brother in ways which reflected her own negative experiences. Beth harmed the family pets by sticking them with pins, and she killed baby birds she found in a nest outside by squeezing them. Tim and Julie locked Beth in a room at night because they thought she would harm her brother if they didn't. They were clearly afraid of Beth. She was described as wild-eyed and having a malicious smile. On one occasion, Beth retrieved knives from a dishwasher with the intent of harming others. Beth was eventually treated by a mental health professional named Ken McGidd, who recorded the therapy sessions. He had an interest in holistic treatments and in children who had antisocial personality features. Beth made several stunning confessions to Ken in a matter-of-fact way. She told Ken how she wanted to kill her brother and her parents. In 1989, when Beth was 6.5 years old, she was treated in what the documentary referred to as a special home for people with attachment problems. She continued to receive therapy until she was 8 years old. As an adult, Beth wrote a book about her childhood experiences. Beth Thomas eventually became a registered nurse at a hospital in Arizona and has been quite successful. The clinician who treated her, Ken McGidd, died in 2005 in an airplane crash. The documentary has been criticized by some mental health clinicians as being overly dramatic. The recorded interviews seemed a bit forced to elicit dramatic content, like Ken just kept asking questions until he received the answer he was looking for. Also, there didn't appear to be much content sampled from more mundane parts of the interview. It was as if the only thing Beth was talking about was murder, which is hard to believe. Ken was accused of sensationalizing Beth's symptoms in order to frighten parents of adopted children. The documentary promoted an unusual conceptualization of reactive attachment disorder, including implying that children with the disorder possessed a superficial charm, did not have a conscience, and were at a great risk to develop psychopathy. This conceptualization differs substantially from the definition of reactive attachment disorder listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Now moving to the definition of reactive attachment disorder. This disorder is a rare disturbance that is evident before 5 years of age, which cannot be better explained by autism spectrum disorder. Here are the criteria for reactive attachment disorder. The child demonstrates a pattern of emotionally withdrawn behavior toward caregivers. For example, they rarely seek comfort when distressed. The child has at least two of the three following symptoms related to affective disturbance: minimal social and emotional responsiveness to others, limited positive affect, and irritability, sadness, or fearfulness. There is a pattern of insufficient care in the child's history. For example, deprivation of basic needs, repeated changes in caregivers, or growing up in unusual settings. Based on the subjective nature of these criteria, it's not surprising that reactive attachment disorder is difficult to diagnose. It has a high level of comorbidity with oppositional defiant disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, ADHD, and of course, autism spectrum disorder. It is a poorly researched disorder for which no long-term outcome data are available. Most researchers who study reactive attachment disorder believe it is legitimate, like it exists in reality. But these subjective criteria make applying the disorder in clinical settings very challenging. It's not clear in many instances how a diagnosis of reactive attachment disorder in a client would actually change the therapeutic strategies that are used. Now moving to my analysis. Sometimes a mental disorder takes on a life of its own in the treatment community or even outside of the treatment community. For example, dissociative identity disorder has attracted a lot of attention on social media. Many people claim they have the disorder and attempt to document extreme, unusual, and unlikely behaviors ostensibly associated with it. A lot of misinformation has been generated about that disorder. In a strange way, it's almost like dissociative identity disorder has its own fan club, like some people wish they had the disorder. Unfortunately, reactive attachment disorder has also become the focus of wild theories, bizarre conceptualizations, and inaccurate information. The misinformation on reactive attachment disorder is tied not only to the symptoms, but to the treatment. An entire industry of clinicians and non-clinicians has emerged and attempted to offer solutions to reactive attachment disorder. This fragmented group of therapy providers is not particularly well organized, and they don't appear to be influenced by the research. Many do not have a license to practice psychotherapy. They have generated alternate conceptualizations for reactive attachment disorder and developed highly unusual treatment strategies, often referred to as attachment therapies. First, I'll talk about the alternate conceptualizations. Proponents of non-traditional attachment therapies often reject or fundamentally misunderstand the definition of reactive attachment disorder. For the sake of expediency, I will refer to these proponents as attachment therapists. As I mentioned, the symptoms of reactive attachment disorder involve being emotionally withdrawn, rarely seeking comfort, not being emotionally responsive to others, being irritable or sad, and a history of neglect. Many of these attachment therapists have expanded on these symptoms in ways that are not supported by research. They argue that reactive attachment disorder is characterized by the suppression of rage. The idea is that the child is not releasing the rage, and this leads to an inability to attach or to be affectionate. The child cannot form bonds, and they fail to develop a conscience. Again, these are elements that are not captured in the official definition in any way. Rage is not one of the symptom criteria. In addition, the attachment therapists believe a child with the disorder is trying to seek control of their environment. They resist authority and engage in endless power struggles. They are dishonest, manipulative, grandiose, self-centered, and possess a superficial charm. They exhibit these characteristics in an effort to avoid true attachment. The attachment therapists claim that if a child with reactive attachment disorder is not treated, they are at a substantial risk of becoming psychopathic. Some of these therapists have looked at notorious figures and claimed that they must have had untreated reactive attachment disorder. For example, they have said this about Saddam Hussein, Adolf Hitler, and Jeffrey Dahmer. There is no scientific reason to believe that reactive attachment disorder is associated with psychopathy. This is an unsupported claim. Children who are left untreated may experience developmental delays, difficulty socializing, and engage in risk-taking behaviors, but they are not likely to transform into psychopaths. One curious element of the alternate conceptualization of reactive attachment disorder is how the child is supposedly manipulative. The therapists argue that the disorder is indicative of a sick child who lives in a healthy home. They pretend that environmental problems are not etiological to the disorder, meaning they did not cause the disorder. Like there wasn't necessarily any neglect, and certainly there are no ongoing problems in the environment. Everyone in that child's life is relieved of responsibility. The child is dealing with an internal struggle that no one else caused or contributed to in any way. The child has a character flaw. Again, this is according to these attachment therapists. Research tells us that children with reactive attachment disorder often exhibit good behavior outside the home. This is because they are free of the stress for that moment. But the attachment therapists have a different explanation. They claim that this good behavior is evidence of manipulation. They have placed all the blame on the child with the disorder, which seems incredibly convenient. I think this is attractive to caregivers who are worried about being blamed. This encourages them to select an attachment therapist rather than a clinician who follows the science. I talked about the alternate conceptualization of reactive attachment disorder. Now I will move to the alternate therapies. With this bizarre conceptualization, there are, of course, corresponding bizarre treatments. Attachment therapists have developed all types of ideas on how to treat reactive attachment disorder, most of which are unhelpful. Some are even dangerous. Essentially, the idea behind most of the alternate attachment therapies is that the resistance of the child must be broken in order to promote attachment and improve behavior. Again, the alternate conceptualization views the child as having a character flaw. Only they are to blame for their behavior, definitely not the caregivers. In order to break the resistance, attachment therapists use several different tactics, which they refer to as therapeutic. For example, they may force the child to perform chores or hard labor, make them sit motionless for hours at a time, demand that they get permission to do just about anything, like stand up, eat or drink, or use a restroom, subject them to homeschooling, and remove socialization opportunities, like the child cannot spend time with friends. The child is expected to comply immediately the first time an order is given, and in a strange twist, the attachment therapists demand that the child is fun to be around for the caregivers, who wouldn't be cheerful while performing hard labor or sitting motionless for hours. There are other versions of attachment therapies that are more aggressive as far as trying to break resistance. For example, compression holding therapy, rage reduction therapy, corrective attachment therapy, aversive tickling, and rebirthing therapy. That last one resulted in a fatality of a 10-year-old girl in the year 2000. Two unlicensed therapists were convicted and sent to prison. These more aggressive therapies are based on provoking rage in the child. In theory, the child will eventually stop resisting and then attach to their caregivers. One could argue that the act of provoking rage reflects the conditions that led to the problem in the first place. Research tells us that these tactics lead to more anger and rage. Despite no scientific basis for their beliefs, attachment therapists often tell caregivers that the alternate therapeutic strategies represent the only way to resolve attachment problems. Mainstream clinicians who adhere to scientific principles are just out to make money and are encumbered by being licensed and qualified to conduct psychotherapy. Actual clinicians must follow too many rules to be effective. There is no reason to believe this is true. This is just more inaccurate information promoted by attachment therapists. Moving to the last question, why have so many unskilled clinicians or fake clinicians taken an interest in reactive attachment disorder? There are many self-serving myths which have arisen in the world of psychotherapy. For example, some therapists falsely believe that one particular counseling strategy is the best, or one particular psychotherapeutic degree is superior to others. There is no shortage of nonsensical thinking among therapists. Generally, the various psychotherapeutic fields attract people who want to help others, but sometimes they attract people who are trying to meet their own needs by conducting therapy. Perhaps there is something about the presence of reactive attachment disorder that makes people angry, like they see children misbehaving and believe that it's caused by being bad or evil. They reject any scientific understanding of the disorder and impose a moral framework. Back in the 1980s and the 1990s, the media was fascinated with the idea of the evil child or the psychopathic child. There was a moral panic around adoption that went on for many years. The media terrified parents into believing that adopted children would turn into serial killers. Maybe the attachment therapists were responding to this nonsense and offering caregivers an aggressive way to respond, like they were empowering parents to prevent children from becoming psychopathic. Another possibility is that many of these attachment therapists have a sense of entitlement, are self-centered, and grandiose. They invented these pseudoscientific therapeutic strategies in order to bolster their sense of self-worth, like they have solved a major problem, which eluded licensed and qualified therapists. These unskilled therapists have figured something out that no one else could figure out. Now moving to my final thoughts. The clinician involved in the documentary Child of Rage, Ken McGid, wrote a book titled High Risk, Children Without a Conscience, where he perpetuated this myth that children with reactive attachment disorder would grow up to be con artists, pathological liars, drug users, and psychopathic killers. He thought that difficult children represented one of society's greatest problems. Essentially, he perpetuated the myth of the evil child, terrified a generation of parents, and inadvertently encouraged people to create nonsensical and dangerous therapies. Reactive attachment disorder should be the focus of treatment, not the focus of moral judgment. One thing I've noticed about attachment therapists, as well as others who latch on to specific disorders and pretend to be experts, is how they cross boundaries. Many of them conduct therapy in order to meet their own needs, not the needs of the client. They are trying to terrorize the world with the concept of the psychopathic child, when the world really needs to be afraid of the narcissistic pseudotherapist.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.